Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Jones. Bowden.
He's got it.
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match.
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. So after a couple of months of heat wave, the heavens have finally opened just at the conclusion of the 100, with the eliminator played today, Friday, and then of course the final on Saturday at Lords. I wonder if that's an omen of some kind, although actually I quite like the 100 in many ways. So actually, I thought today we'd look ahead to that final with the star performer of this year's 100, and certainly with the bat anyway, which is, of course, David Milan. Eight matches, 358 runs, an average of nearly 60, and a strike rate of 172. Fabulous. But nothing more than you might expect from a man who was recently number one in the world in T20 international rankings as a batsman. He's now down to fifth, but that's still the highest Englishman in that ICC rankings list. So I thought it'd be interesting to chat to him today. He, of course, his team, the Trent Rockets, are already in that final on Saturday at Lords. And the other place is going to be contested by the London Spirit and the Manchester Originals, now, of course, without Joss Butler, who's been injured for the last two or three games and doesn't sound like he's going to recover anytime soon. Maybe we'll try and focus on getting into the England-Pakistan T20 series in September towards the back end of that series to retain his, or regain his captaincy of England's T20 side. But for the moment, he's on the sidelines. So Manchester Originals without him, and playing Owen Morgan's London Spirit for a place in that final to face Trent Rockets and David Milan. So David Milan came into our virtual cricket club today and I talked to him about lots of things, particularly about whether he is surprised in a way as a very cultured sort of batsman that he has had so much success in the shortest format.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's a total surprise. I obviously backed myself, but I guess without having the opportunity to play international cricket, you don't know how good you can be or whether you are good enough to even be part of that that system. But yeah, I found T20 cricket is just an extension of the longest format. You can still access both sides of the ground instead of only hitting to cow corner or square leg to try and score your runs. And I found a nice balance of being able to score against all types of bowling, both sides of the wicket, which I believe allows me to score at a similar strike rate, just in a different way to everyone else.
You approach it in a different way. I mean, you know, you come from the Ashes last winter, which was obviously tough, to, you know, now playing the 100 from one extreme to the other. And you're the top run scorer in this year's 100 with an astonishing strike rate of 172.11, which amazingly, I just noticed, is exactly the same strike rate as Will Smead, in fact, who's a totally different player, you know, a totally different kind of player. So, you know, how do you jump between those formats so successfully?
Yeah, I'd say, well, I wouldn't say I was successful at Test cricket. You know, I probably disappointed myself in that. I'd love to have done better in that. But as I say, I just believe that T20 cricket is an extension of four-day cricket. So if you're playing a four defensive, you in 50-over cricket, you punch it down the ground. In T20 cricket, you just hit it over the top. I'm a big believer in the basics, keeping it very simple, watching the ball and playing good cricket shots. You know, I think a lot of the times in T20 cricket, bowlers try and outsmart you and sometimes outsmart themselves by actually bowling you bad balls if you have the right intent to put them off. So, yeah, I'd say trying to keep it as simple as I can, have the intent to score and stick to the basics as well as I can, and just an extension of the four-day game, I believe.
Is it also quite a different mindset, though? Because in Test cricket, you're really looking to bat a long time and to, you know, get through the phases of the game. And, you know, I mean, most batsmen with any sort of value in themselves want to make 100 in a Test match, clearly, or more. But in T20, if you make a quick 32 off the first 21 balls, that is regarded as a good score, as a good start, let's say. You open the batting, so that's regarded as a good start. And yet, you walk off with 32 from 21 balls, you've got the innings going. Isn't there an element of frustration because you want to have kept going?
Oh, 100%. I think the one thing about T20 cricket is accepting that you do fail a lot, and accepting that you actually have to take a lot of risk to get a lot of reward. What that risk is different. I might say a risk to me is trying to hit one over extra cover. Someone like a Liam Livingston might try to say a risk for him is just to hit it over cow corner. You know, so everyone has different risks. You still want to get the same result. It's the acceptance that you do fail a lot more in T20 cricket. It's acceptance that doing an ugly role for the team is actually a successful role. So if you open the batting, you want to get off as quick a start as you want, as you can. Sometimes you bat 3 and 4, you have to sometimes play the ugly role and taking your foot off the gas to enable the game to move forward in the right way and allow people to bat out around you. And also, if you look at guys that bat 5-6, you know, they can have a great game and get 15 off 8 and get a massive pat on the shoulder for doing what you needed for the team. So I think it's the acceptance that you will score slightly less runs. You will affect the games in different ways at different stages in the game, and actually being proud of the fact that you've done that. I think a lot of the times if we get hard on ourselves in T20 cricket and say, well, I've only averaged 20 here, to strike rate of 135. Well, you know, were you playing on tough wickets? Was that the runs that you needed to score on those specific wickets to win the games? Because ultimately, I think we get lost a little bit now in you know, I'd say the historical side is averages, and now it's strike rates. And it's, oh, you can fail at average 20 but have a strike rate of 140 and you're still good, or you can average, I don't know, 14 of a strike rate of 120, and that is okay, but it's not good because we want something else. But ultimately, we as cricketers are here to win games of cricket. So if you get 32 or 21 on a flat one and you lose, you're probably a bit disappointed that you didn't go on. If you get 32 of 21 on a low scorer and you've actually moved the game forward in the sense that you've actually put yourselves in a winning position, you're actually happy with it. So it's that catch 22 of you're playing the conditions in front of you, and you're playing the game in front of you, instead of playing the preconceived idea that everyone wants, which is a 50 and a strike rate of 200, which we'd all love to do, but it's just impossible.
Do you think that, you know, you've had a lot of experience of playing, you know, all formats now. Do you think in a way Test cricket, especially as a batsman, is almost more about the individual, the player who has to find a way, you know, Alistair Cook being a classic example, Joe Root, find a way to get as many runs as possible themselves, and obviously, you know, build partnerships, but it's about the individual, whereas T20 and 100 is more about the team.
Yeah, 100%. I think ultimately all of them are individual games in the team sport, but more so I'd say T20 cricket, you have to play for the team more, if that makes sense. So you can go through a tough period in a four-day game and not score a run for the whole session, if that happens, but you're still getting the team into good position if you kick on afterwards. In T20 cricket, you can cost the game by eating up too many balls, but you can also be a match winner by walking out and facing the last ball of an over in the 19th over and slogging that for six and getting six off one and changing the game and making the game a winning game in the end. So there is so many things in T20 cricket where, you know, just because you want to play a certain way, that doesn't allow it. You have to sort of adjust and play the way that the team needs you to play at that specific time, that specific moment in the game, which I guess makes failure so much harder because everyone has a game plan, like you do in test cricket and 50-over cricket, but how many times are you able to stick to that if you're batting at 3, 4, 5, 6 when you're coming at different stages of a game?
In the past, you know, I don't know, a couple of years, you've sometimes probably been unfairly accused of sort of starting slowly and then catching up. A, was that unfair? And B, have you changed, if necessary?
I'd say a lot of it's unfair. You know, ultimately, your goal is to win games of cricket. If you're doing that and you're not winning games of cricket, then that's a problem. But if you're doing whatever you're doing to score runs, to win games of cricket for your country or for your team, that's what you need to do. You know, a lot of the times, I'd say you can take the stats into whichever way you want to use them. A lot of the time in this England T20 team, we've either been chasing 140 or we got off to a fly and we only need to bat at 5 or 6 and over to win a game of cricket. So strike rate's irrelevant. You're there to win a game of cricket. Sometimes I have got it wrong and you hold your hand up and you accept that. But also, you know, the nature of the game, the nature of this T20 team has always been they need someone to bat around for the rest of the guys to be able to be positive. So you do your role and you get nailed for it and you play the situation how you want it. But, you know, there's a lot of preconceived ideas for it. I strike at 138 in international T20 cricket, which is more than Johnny and more than, you know, Jay Ross.
That's probably slightly more than Joss, actually.
Similar. But, you know, if I'm slow in one department, where are they slow? You know, so you never hear that side of the story. It's always, you know, it's the same story and same narrative from the same people. And no matter how many times you change that or you do something different, it's still the same narrative. So it does get a bit frustrating from that point of view, because ultimately my job is to score runs and win games of cricket for England. If I'm not, I won't be playing in the team. If I'm batting too slowly, I won't be in the team. But if we're winning games of cricket, then you're batting at the tempo that is needed on that specific day to win the game. And that's all I judge myself on.
So you're talking about winning games of cricket and you've won quite a few for Trent Rockets. The reason why you're down in London now is because it's the final on Saturday at Lords. You don't know who you're playing yet. What's been the secret of the success of that side, do you think, this year?
I think we've got a well-balanced side. I think, you know, last year Andy was the coach and he inherited Stephen Fleming's initial draft and he was able to sort of piece together. We still got to the semi-finals last year. Andy had the opportunity to sort of add and take away things to the squad where he thought we lacked last year. So I went from 3 to open the batting, which is something I've done in county cricket for me to be picked for England, obviously bat for England at 3. And then wherever I move around in the world, I end up batting 3, 4, 5 now because I bat 3 for England, or I have batted 3 for England. So, you know, getting players into the positions where they're comfortable, especially now that there's less balls, it gives them an opportunity to express themselves in the way they do it. We've got a good balanced team in the sense that we've got a lot of all rounders. So we believe that we are able to have batting depth and bowling depth. So we always have 6 bowlers, whereas last year we only had 5 bowlers, which we found we struggled with. And it enables us to go and be as positive as we can in the first, well, from ball one, to allow us, because we have that batting depth, we've got Samet batting at 6 sometimes, Sams and Lewis Gregory at 7 and 8. And when we had Rashid Khan, he was at 9. So you just have this amazing tail, which gives you so much power to keep going during the innings. And I think we learned a lot from last year as well. We learned that, you know, some of the games we'd walk off getting 140 and go, it's a tough wicket, we're in the game. And we'd lose it with 25 balls to go. And we could never work it out because we approached it a bit like a T20 game. Whereas now we're slightly more, I'd say, leaning towards being over positive and rather risk being bowling out, getting bowled out early to give ourselves a score of chasing, of defending, especially when batting first. And when we bat second, obviously it's slightly easier because you know what you have to bat at the tempo.
And you modestly haven't mentioned your own contribution and the fact that you've opened the batting with Alex Hales. That's quite a combination, isn't it? How's that been, batting with Alex?
Yeah, good. Playing at Middlesex my whole career, I had Paul Sterling that I opened the batting with. And they don't look alike, but they both play similarly, where they just go out and they try and attack from ball one. They always put in the pressure on. And I've really enjoyed batting with people like that because it takes the pressure off me. People try and be more attacking and defensive against me, which then gives me more scoring options. You know, they try and get him off strike, which then, you know, by getting him off strike with a left-arm spinner, gives me a matchup, which works out beautifully for me. So yeah, it's nice to play with good players and guys that are experienced. You know, I think we dovetail really well. My strengths are, might not be his strengths, but we sort of play off each other quite well. And, you know, I mean, in the last game, for example, we had a short boundary one side and, you know, at the start of the 10, he'd just look at me and go, "Your end." And after then I'd be like, "Your end." And then we just get each other on strike. And it was just, we just have an understanding with that. But I guess that comes from experience and playing a lot of cricket in our careers.
I love it. Simple philosophy. No kind of business of, well, I'll hit this guy slightly wider of extra cover, or, you know, I better watch out for his slower ball. It's just your end or my end. Great. For short boundaries. And I mean, I've got to ask you, Alex Hales, England T20, wouldn't it be a great seat to have him and you together in that side? You've got some big games coming up, Pakistan, etc.
I obviously don't know what's going on there. I don't think it's right for me to comment about stuff that's, you know, going on with a different player. But, you know, it is what it is. I have no say over that. I have no opinion, really. I think I've probably benefited from Alex not being in and around. I've got my opportunity from him sort of sliding out of the 15, if you want to put it that way. But yeah, look, it is what it is. I think there's people that get paid a lot more money that make those decisions than I do.
For nearly four decades, J&K Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started J&K Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. J&K Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
What about you opening for England in T20? Is that a consideration? I know Jason Roy is the resident opener, but they could try you up top, could they, do you think? I mean, would you be keen?
Look, I've said it on record numerous times, I'll bat 11 if it means I play for England. So, you know, wherever the team feel that I fit in, I'll happily, you know, bat wherever they want me to bat. And that's been the case in my T20 career. I've opened a few games and done okay. I've batted three and done okay. And I've about a four and in the World Cup, about a five in one of the games, the previous World Cup. So, you know, I bat wherever the team need me to bat. You know, if they ask me to open, I open. If they ask me to bat three, I bat three. Just going to sit on that one, but I'll bat wherever they ask me to bat.
What do you think of the 100 overall? Does it have the impact on the players that it seems to have on the younger members of the public anyway?
100%. I think it's an unbelievably good tournament. I think it's a tournament that we as players have been craving for a number of years. You know, the Blast is an unbelievably good tournament, and it's been exceptionally good in providing so many cricketers to play for England and producing so many cricketers. But I think we as players felt that we needed to either have franchise it or to maybe get a stronger, be stronger sort of tournament. Not to say the Vitality Blast isn't strong, or that, you know, it's just, you know, if you have 18 teams, you condense and date, you probably get a stronger tournament. And the 100 has obviously been born. Not that I had any say over the 100 or any input in that. But, you know, we as players, we go and play in all the different leagues around the world, and you see how good a sort of franchise-based tournament is, which is short, sharp, best be best, where you're able to work with the best coaches, you're able to work with different players that you haven't worked with, you're able to learn off them. And it's amazing how quickly you develop as a player when you're playing with someone that you might have watched as a as a young kid or someone that you've watched and admired, and suddenly you're sharing and changing with them, and you can ask questions and you can learn from them. And I think that's where, you know, English cricket will benefit tremendously from the 100.
So who would you say you've benefited from in particular over the last couple of years playing with or against?
Well, I was fortunate when I was at Middlesex to have Brendan McCullum come and open the batting for 2 seasons. So to be able to watch him and to sort of listen to how he goes about his things, about how he goes about always taking the positive option, which obviously rubbed on at Morgs, obviously playing with Owen for so many years and learning of him, a left-hander as well. You know, and then you go to the different leagues and you go to Pakistan and you're playing with Misbah Haq, or you're able to chat to him, pick his brain, as he was a coach in one of the teams. And you go to, you know, the IPL and you've got Kumble and you've got Andy Flower that's played all around the world. You've got KL Rahul, who's so successful, and you can pick their brains and just watch how they train, watch how they do things, pick things up. You know, speaking to Joss Butler about how he power hits, you can take small things here and there that works for him and try them in your game. And if they work, they work. If they don't, you can shelve them. And that's the whole beauty of it, is that you have so much more knowledge to gain from the players that have been so successful in their careers.
And I suppose preparation, you mentioned that a bit, that's a key thing. Just quickly, how do you differ in your preparation for longer format to the 100? So, for instance, on Saturday morning or Saturday afternoon before the final, how will you prepare for that?
Well, so one of the things about shorter formats that really I don't enjoy are meetings, and we do meetings. So wherever you go, you'd have a meeting about the team, about what you're going to come up against from a bowler, from a batter. I'm a type of player that likes to do my own homework. So I sit and will study the bowlers and work out what plans I want to do against them, how I'm going to score off them, you know, what their slow balls are, what they do under pressure. Most guys have trends. You know, most guys would be like, if they're under pressure, they go Yorker. If they're under pressure, they go slow ball. So you can read this sort of game and sort of try and be one step ahead of them. You know, so we'll probably have that. Then we'll get to the ground. You have lunch. You have your physio. You do your strapping, if you do strapping. And then at a certain time, I'd like to go out and hit my balls. I have the same routine that I do for everything, that whether I play red ball cricket or white ball cricket, I have the same routine of just making sure my balance is good and that I can hit the ball to mid on and feel the ball in the middle of the bat.
And does that take, is that like, do you have a set number of balls, or is it just when you feel right, you stop?
Just when I feel right. I give myself 15 minutes. And if I feel good after 7-8 minutes, then I'll move on. And if I don't feel good, I'll use all 15 minutes.
Brendan McCullum, you mentioned him earlier as a colleague at Middlesex. What have you made of his input onto the test side then?
Yeah, it's been brilliant, hasn't it? How good has it been to watch? I know they had the blip at Lord's, but 5 out of 6 tests to go and play the way they have, that positively, I think it's been fantastic. It's been a breath of fresh air. It doesn't look like they're under pressure. Even though they are under pressure, it looks like the pressure's been taken off them. It doesn't look like they're all playing for their last test match, which, you know, I felt like in my time when I played, you were always feeling like you were never sure if you were going to get another test or you're going to make another series. So you're always sort of looking over your shoulder a bit. Whereas, you know, it looks like they've almost taken the white ball mantra of, we're going to back you to the hilt. You will come good. If you don't come good, you've been given every opportunity to come good, instead of it being, oh, we've given you 3 test matches and you're off. You know, and they're giving guys long periods of time to go and perform and show themselves. And a lot of people might criticize that and be like, oh, well, he needs to get dropped and he needs this. But I think it's fantastic that they're backing their players. And you know, eventually someone will get dropped. Eventually there might be 1-2 players that move on and they find another player, a couple of players, and hopefully they get back the same way as those players did. Because it has been successful in white ball cricket to create a fearless brand of cricket where people are able to go and enjoy their cricket like they would do for their counties, where they go and score ton loads of runs. You know, to be able to go and do exactly the same for England. Initially, it was really tough getting dropped after the Ashes. You know, I got brought back 2 tests before, and in those 7 test matches that I played, there's only Rooty that scored more runs than me. So obviously was disappointed when I got dropped at the time. You know, I just had a little one as well, a little child. So that was good for me to get my mind off that stuff. And then because of that, I had a 2 or 3 month break. So that allowed me to sort of get away from the game and mentally refresh after, you know, a tough 18 months of COVID bubbles. You know, I was really feeling it towards the end. I wasn't enjoying cricket, nothing to do with my results or the team or anything. I just wasn't enjoying playing cricket. The bubbles had absolutely destroyed me. So having the 3 months after that Ashes was actually probably a career saver in that sense, in the fact that I was able to go and get refreshed mentally, not think about cricket, didn't pick up a bat for 2 months, spend time at home, which I hadn't been able to do. And it sort of, I'd probably say it puts things a little bit more in perspective that cricket isn't the be and end all. I would love to play in this system here under the new guys, where you're backed and you're given a long run. I played 2 Ashes Test series out in Australia, leading the run score in the one, scored the second most in the other, and got dropped very close both afterwards. So who knows what could have been, but, you know, ultimately if I'd scored more runs at the time, then I wouldn't be having this chat with you.
You're now approaching the final of the 100 at Lords. You're a Middlesex man originally, played at Lords for many years. Just talk us through the concept of the 100 final, the fireworks, the DJs, the archway that you have to run through to come onto the field. How does that fit with your original kind of impression of Lords as a young player? And can you believe it's sort of gone to that level of transformation?
It's definitely changed, I must admit. You know, one of the proudest moments for me as a Middlesex player was, you know, when you go and bat, was to walk through the long room and down the steps, and you run straight onto the field, and you've lost that. Now you've got to go walk all the way around and go walk through a different arch, which is different. I'd love the arch to be there so you can run past the members and walk past, and you get the clap when you get naught as well, which is brilliant. So you have to go a different way now, which works as well, so you avoid that. But yeah, it's different. I mean, like, even like this game, we're in the home dressing room, and the London Spirit, if they were to win tomorrow, will be in the away dressing room. So it's really strange. It's really strange how it's just suddenly changed. It's not, there's no one's home ground. It's like we're just there to play and we get on with what it is. But it's exciting. It's exciting to see that not only can times change, but organisations change to make things, as good for everyone, you know, whether it be kids or adults, that they possibly can.
And I suppose in the end, fundamentally, it's a game of cricket, isn't it? With a ball and a bat.
It is. It literally is. There's a lot of gimmicks around. Which is brilliant, because that's what kids want to watch. That's what the young people, they want to watch the bright lights. They want to see fireworks. They want to hear music. They want to have a relaxed atmosphere. But ultimately, you still got the best 11 players playing against the best 11 players possible on that day. And it's been fantastic cricket. You know, you tune on and you watch the other games in the evenings. And it's brilliant to watch the best players playing against the best players, which is, you know, what I want as a player. And I guess the paying public do too.
You know what they want to do, really? They want to take a catch off a David Milan wallop over deep mid-wicket, really, don't they?
They have to come to the front few rows if they want that.
And I suppose, you know, given your likely schedule, Red Bull cricket is a distant thing in a far-off land at the moment. I mean, when are you going to play your next Red Bull game? It could be next April, I suppose.
Yeah, well, there's a game starting on Monday, so I need to speak to Goffey about that and the ECB, because we, you know, if you're in the Pakistan squad and World Cup squads, we fly on the 14th of September, so we need a bit of a break after, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 months of cricket already. And it's amazing that you look at, you've just had 5 months of a full-on schedule, which everyone knows has been so busy, and then, you know, you finish the 100 on the 3rd and you fly on the 14th, so you have 11 days, if selected for those tours, to recover before going to Pakistan for 2.5-3 weeks, and then Australia for a month and a half, with literally 10-day break. So that's not easy from that point of view. But yeah, from a Red Bull point of view, at the moment, it looks like, unless things don't go my way, it looks like I'll probably be playing April next year.
Well, I thought David Milan spoke very honestly there about his own role in teams, and he was quite modest actually about his immense contribution over the last year or two in T20 particularly, and obviously he's looking forward to that final at Lords on Saturday, weather permitting, of course. And, you know, it'd be interesting to see what his role will be for England going forwards. He certainly deserves to be still in that T20 side, which heads off to Pakistan for some one-dayers, some T20s, and then of course it's the T20 World Cup in Australia in October, so lots to look forward to for David Milan. Certainly sounds like a headache trying to manage your schedule if you're one of those multi-format players, but the English season's kind of at least simplifying a little bit after this weekend with the county championship back, and of course the third test match against South Africa at the Oval starting on Thursday, the decider. And to preview that, I've invited England's former coach Andy Flower into our virtual cricket club early next week, so we'll hear from him about what he thought about England's progress over the summer and a little bit about the 100 final, which his team Trent Rockets are in, of course. So Andy Flower is our next guest on this show next week. We're looking ahead to that third test at the Oval. Good luck to both teams in that 100 final, whoever they are. And we'll be back next week with our podcast previewing the third test. Thanks for listening.
Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.